Tom Barton Sports, the Sports Garden with ET. Always a welcome edition. Sir, how are you on this Tuesday?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Jake?
I'm hanging in there. You know, I did a lot of thinking Sunday night, putting things in perspective. Of course, we all learned regarding Medina Spirit, Kentucky Derby. Here we go again, another Baffert horse. I think there have been six, Tom, so far this year. You know, the comparisons to Bill Belichick and his sport as far as being an equal. And then I look at Belichick with all the nonsense there with Spygate, Deflategate, mainly Brady. But, you know, I'm trying to put it in perspective as far as where we're at in the world of sports as an outlet for so many. Yet, you know, you go back to the Black Sox scandal back in the day, 1919, and there we go. The Astros, the sign-stealing, banging on the trash cans. I mean, you could go on and on and on here. Cork bats. I mean, it's almost as if it's not even pure anymore as far as the world of sports. And listen, I'm not just saying that regarding the Derby because I lost a shekel or two. I look at it in perspective as far as where we are out at, as far as our outlet in our lives. And the sanctity of it all, and we can't even watch a legitimate event these days without wondering, was it tainted? That's what I got out of it in the last couple of days, Tom. What have you been thinking about?
You know, I'll tell you, there's two ways to look at this, Jay. There is the way that you looked at it, you know, where it is a black cloud. It is bad. You don't want to see this, like you said, sports. And then you have the other side of this where, you know, a famous professional wrestler said, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right? Meaning, look, everyone's going to take that advantage. And I think they've been doing it forever. We just live in an information age now, Jay, where more of this is coming out and it's easier to catch people. You know, there's a difference between egregiously throwing games like the 1919 Black Sox and maybe taking an advantage. Now, I'm not forgiving what, you know, Bill Belichick did. I'm not forgiving what Baffert did. But there is a massive leap from what the White Sox or the Black Sox scandal was to Tom Brady blowing up football a little bit more. You know, there is a difference between what we're talking as far as level of it. Remember, in the 80s and 90s, we always look back and hearken and go, oh, man, it was such a great time. Even the 70s, they were cork bats all the time. I remember watching a game, I think it was Albert Bell that swung, hit a ball, and all of a sudden, you know, balls came flying out of his rubber balls came flying out of his bat. You know, there's always been that. We have, you know, we used to laugh and joke that the Phil Negro and Gaylord Perry and these guys used to throw spitballs and have Major League Baseball, Major League, the movie, talking about, well, yeah, I put jalapeno on the ball and scuffing it up, and Negro used to use sandpaper. I think it's been happening forever, Jay. I just think that we're in an age now where we're catching it a little bit more, and because of social media, it's easier to catch.
Nonetheless, a little bit of a damper on things, no question about it. That's going to be interesting if that second test gives you that confirmation. Regarding the horse, and listen, it's vehemently been denied as far as what Baffert is telling you, but, you know, you have a guy like Baffert, you know, when this happens to Baffert, it's happened multiple times here, you know, you really wonder, what in the heck are we doing here? This is a guy who's pretty high on the chain as far as being a prominent player in this sport, and that's an eye-opener there. That's something to keep an eye on. All right, let's give you a little potpourri as far as what's happening in and around the world of sports, Mr. Barton. So, baseball season, we are in into the month of May. We're 6 weeks in and everything else. Biggest surprises, biggest disappointment?
I think that the biggest surprise has to be the Kansas City Royals at this point. I mean, even just staying in the race, you can ask baseball fans, and they can't name you guys that are in that starting rotation. And the one name that you knew was Mike Minor. And Mike Minor looks like garbage. He's the worst guy, but they have a lot of young talent, and they've been playing well. Now, they're in a weak division, right, granted. So you can't say, you know, they're blowing people's brains out here. They're going, oh, my God, they're amazing. But look, I don't care who you are and what division you are. If you're right there in the hunt, couple of games out of first, yeah, you got to be taken seriously. So I think the Royals are the biggest surprise for me on the good side, because they really are playing well, and you have to give them a lot of credit for playing well. I think the other side of the coin here, because, you know, you look and you go, okay, sure, there are some bad teams and some teams here and there. I think the Washington Nationals are a big surprise on the bad side. Now, I didn't believe in the Nationals because of their, you know, their injuries and stuff. But you look at their team and you say, Juan Suriel might win the MVP or be in the race. Trey Turner will be a top 10 pick in the MVP race, or certainly could be. Max Scherzer could be in the Cy Young conversation. Brad Hand is the best closer in the National League right now, and he was last year. I mean, they have a lot of talent, and to be sitting there and to be sitting in dead last place looking up at teams like the Miami Marlins, I think that's the worst-case scenario for Washington, and you start to get into a position where they're entering May and now going into mid-May, and people are going, all right, when is Scherzer going to be dealt? When is Scherzer going to be dealt is the conversation in Washington, a team that is stacked with all that talent. So I would say the Royals and Washington on the other side of the spectrum are the eye openings for the early part of the season.
I'm doing a little potpourri here in the world of sports. News yesterday, and I thought it was a terrible move by Urban Meyer, that Tim Tebow was going to be a part of the team, not as a quarterback, but as a tight end. I'm scratching my head. Because if you're telling me he will be great for the locker room, I'm not so sure. Because to me, you put a guy like this on the team who hasn't seen the league since, what, 2012? Tom? So you're putting a guy on the team, and I know the mindset for many on that squad is going to be, well, you know what? He's taking the job away from somebody else. And you know the name of Colin Kaepernick's going to come up as far as not being given a chance here. So what really went into the thinking of an Urban Meyer as far as maybe paying homage to a former player of his in the likes of Tim Tebow?
You know, I may be the only person in America that thinks it's a good move. And I don't like Urban Meyer. I thought it was a great move, actually. Look, if this happened after Urban Meyer had been in the league and bouncing around a little bit or been in the job for a little while, I would say terrible. But you got to remember, Urban Meyer is taking the leap from college to the pros. Most of his staff are kind of put together. Remember, a lot of these guys, he hasn't been in football for a while. So to surround himself, Tim Tebow isn't securing a roster spot. He's going to have to go out there and earn it. But to surround himself and his young players and his young staff and everybody else with players that know his style, I don't think is a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing to have Tim Tebow come in and go, okay, look, I'm familiar with him. This is what I want out of my player. Even if it's only during spring or summer camp and everybody's watching him during summer camp, this is what I want out of my player. And here's the other thing that people are forgetting. If Urban Meyer, everybody knows how much they love Tim Tebow and how much Urban Meyer loves him. If Urban Meyer cuts Tim Tebow, doesn't that also send a message as well? Oh, wow, you know, he's like his best friend. He gave him a shot. He took all this flack. Well, my job might be on the line because he's even willing to cut Tebow. I think it's a good situation. As far as the Kaepernick thing, which I saw a lot of people make that reference to, look, let's be honest. Tim Tebow wants to play football. Colin Kaepernick never did. Colin Kaepernick turned down a giant contract. That's why he's out of the league. That is often forgotten in the entire kneeling situation. Tim Tebow is coming back on a league minimum price to try to play a different position. He's going to be absolutely blasted at everything he does. The microscope's going to be on him. I wouldn't be surprised if Hard Knocks was down there. And he's got a very legit chance to get cut by a guy that he looks at like a father figure in the full view of everyone, kind of ending his career. So he wants to play, and he knows the downfall of it all. Colin Kaepernick was turned down multiple contracts because he wants more money. So I think it's a false equivalent. I know, you know, you kind of just said it, but I've watched people go absolutely crazy about this thing. Look, if Colin Kaepernick wanted to come back at a league minimum to play a position he's never played, okay, he has a job tomorrow. Colin Kaepernick wanted to play quarterback and be a backup at league minimum, he probably has a job tomorrow. He's had job offers, and he's turned them down. Never wanted to play football. He wanted to be a martyr.
And listen, I will say this. I think he has no talent as far as what he can bring to the table, and that's why he hasn't found his job as far as the NFL is concerned. I just think the mindset might sway to that type of thinking within that locker room. And that's something to be mindful of. And when you have a young team and everything else, you want unity. Something to keep an eye on as far as those Jaguars. Now, I'll be keeping an eye on LeBron James tonight. You're going to see him return to the floor against the Knicks. Lakers are in a very delicate situation. Winning a championship in the bubble last season. Have, what is it, the seventh slot right now. So they're in that playoff, play-in game type situation. A tricky spot. Let's face it, LeBron has been in the headlines lately, and it hasn't been good with all that has happened. And as far as, you know, the Twitter account and saying things and writing things. Listen, at this point in time, it's delicate. When you look at the Lakers, you think of him, you think of Anthony Davis. They can't survive without both playing together. So a very interesting spot tonight in L.A.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting spot overall for the season for this. Remember, LeBron James didn't want to play in the bubble. He was upset about that. Then LeBron James wanted to push the season back. He was upset about playing, having to play the season right away. Now he's got these injuries. He's been injured two of the last 3 years, and he's hobbled. And look, he's a big guy. He takes care of his body, but at a certain age, you're getting, you know, banged in underneath the basket like that. You're going to be broken down and beat up. And there was a reason why he was so vocal to not play. Now, all of a sudden, you hear, oh, yeah, we're just going to throw the band back together and play a play-in game. We're going to be perfectly fine. I don't like the Lakers this year at all. And I think that LeBron James is a guy that he feels like, oh, I could just walk onto the court and be okay. Hey, you know what? He's a professional athlete. You can't just walk onto the court, not play forever, and just dominate. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you think you're LeBron James at 100%. I don't think he's 100%. What you go back and you look past the normal every day, and you go, wait a minute, he didn't want to play. He argued about playing. There was rumors, Jay, because remember, they were not tested for steroids inside the bubble. There were rumors that steroids were running rampant. I don't know if it was LeBron, but those were the rumors. So you start to look at all this stuff, body breaking down, didn't want to play, didn't want this. How much is his head really in it? Look, he's got a championship with the Lakers, right? If he doesn't win it this year, don't people go, well, you know what? He won it last year. It was tough to come back from the bubble, and he's been banged up. I mean, it's a built-in excuse almost. I think LeBron James is an activist now. I think basketball is secondary. I think the minute he went to L.A., basketball became secondary. And it wouldn't shock me if he turned it around and Lakers looked really good. They have the talent to do it. But I'd be very surprised if we see the Lakers win another championship this year. And I think a lot of it is going to do with LeBron James, LeBron James's health, but also LeBron James's mindset of, I must win here. He's already got that ring.
I thought the Nets would be the winners eventually. I'm not so sure anymore. I don't even think it'll happen. Even if the three play on the court in Durant, Harden, and Irving, these guys needed to gel together for a period of time with only a few games left in the regular season. I'm not so sure. I'm really not. Even if they get on the court together, come the postseason, you know they will. I'm not so sure they got it together. I really am not. And I really question the Nets. And they could be knocked out even in the first round, in my estimation.
Yeah, you know, the Nets are an interesting story because everybody loved them. Everybody was on top of them. I don't think they'll be knocked out in the first round. You know, they're going to play the Pacers or the Hornets. It's a possibility they play the Wizards. They'll be able to beat any of those teams. But when you get into the Celtics, when you get into the Heat, when you get into the Bucks, Sixers, even the Knicks could give them problems. You know, there are teams that can give them problems. Teams that, like you said, have gelled, have played together. You have to get all three of them on the court is the mentality. I argue differently. I think two of the three might be better, Jay, just because they played together. It's hard. It's the same thing I just said about the Lakers. It is hard to all of a sudden not know the team, not know this, and just rely upon talent. Talent gets you so far in this league, and in every sports league, talent gets you so far. But you've got to have some kind of camaraderie. You have to have some kind of chemistry. I don't think the Nets have that chemistry. Now, again, it's very hard to discount the amount of overwhelming talent that the Nets bring to the table. And a guy like Kevin Durant can take game over by himself and move you on in a series. I don't expect them to lose in the first round, maybe not the second round. But when they go up against an experienced Bucks team or a Sixers team, or, you know, again, even a Heat team or a Celtics team, I really do worry about them. They are not well coached. They have no chemistry. And they're a team that is somewhat sloppy after the big three. This is not like hockey. There's no rotation. You're gonna have to use those five, six guys off the bench and whatnot. And I just don't see it for the Nets.
You mentioned hockey. Black eye for the league last week, I thought. Tom Wilson only getting fined $5,000 for the altercations a week ago Monday at Madison Square. Artemi Panarin, Pavel Buchnevich, I thought it was deplorable and only got a fine. Should have been suspended. You wouldn't have had all the antics last Wednesday night at the start of the game with the fights and the 140-some-odd minutes in penalty minutes. I thought the league could have done a little more, and it lost a little bit of its luster as far as I'm concerned how they handled Tom Wilson. If he had to do it all over again, would he do the same thing, Gary Bettman?
You know, listen, he better have. And then, by the way, you find the Rangers for putting out a statement against Tom Wilson. If Gary Bettman wants hockey to be this way, I'm okay with it. I am. Look, you know what? Hockey's a nasty sport. Tom Wilson's a jerk, okay? But he would get his own. They would take it out on the court. And this is how things used to be resolved. In the 80s and 90s, this is the way that things were resolved. You know what? You want to be a jerk out there? You want to be a cheap shot artist? Good. We're going to do it back to you. Your head's going to be banged into the ice itself. It's going to happen right back to you. But to turn around and to slap just a small fine on a guy that's repeatedly done this and then tell the league you can't retaliate, you can't say anything. No, no, no. You got to pick a zone here, Bettman. You're either going to let this be, you know, archaic and go animalistic, and they're going to take care of itself, and games are going to start with dropping the gloves right away. The puck drops, the gloves drop, and let's go crazy, and you're going to police it yourself out there. Or you got to really say, you know what, we're cleaning the NHL up, which you told us about a decade ago. We're not going to have fights anymore. We're not going to be this nasty league, which means guy like Tom Wilson, you know what, not only are you thrown out for the rest of the year, you're out for the playoffs for something as ridiculous as that. And that is the problem. It's the mixed messages in sports that drives me crazy about these commissioners. If you want to take a hard stance in one situation, then you had better take a hard stance in situation two.
Quick one. Islanders survive the Penguins. I think it's a better matchup than the Capitals. What do you think?
You know, I like the Islanders against everybody in that conference. I really do. I think the Islanders proved last year their style of play, while it might be hard to watch, right, and their style of play isn't exactly aesthetically pleasing, it gets it done. They are well coached. They have guys on this team that they brought in. Look, if Anders Lee didn't get hurt this year, I would probably be taking the Islanders to go to the Cup. I mean, I'm not an Islander fan, guys. That's how much I think that they could excel here. I love their style of play in the playoffs. I can't stand it during the regular season because it's just not aesthetically pleasing, but I don't care. It's effective. And you look at a team like the Penguins, a team like the Bruins, and a team like Washington, they all have immense talent. Sure, they got the big names. You got everything that you want. The Crosby's, the Ovechkins, the Marchands. You have everything you want from those teams to be a Stanley Cup contender, but they don't have the consistent play and the defense and the slowdown notion that is, you know what, we're going to just be that tough out. When you go into an Islanders series, I know it's blasé to say, people say it all the time, but you're going to feel it the next day, right? They're going to hit you. They're going to make you earn every single goal. I love that about the Islanders. Now, I worry here and there about their lack of scoring, and they don't have that one player. Usually when I'm betting on something and I'm betting on the playoffs, I'm going, I want that one guy. And the Islanders are almost 15-1 to win the Cup. I think they're winning the Cup, but I certainly do like them as a plus underdog in the first round. I like them as a plus underdog as far as I could take them, and they'll be an underdog until they're knocked out. I'm taking a shot with them. I think it's a tough series. It is probably better than Washington, but it's still a tough series, but I think the Islanders could get by. I really am a fan of this style once the playoffs come.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that. Tom Barton Sports, the sports cotton. That's with the T, ladies and gentlemen. Tom, always a pleasure to get your perspective.
Thank you very much, guys.